Radioactive!
If you have a party that's all for the old fogies, then that's just going to die away eventually because old people die.
Okay, our theme is not death.
Quite the opposite.
It's changes, shifts.
Whether those changes are for better
or for worse.
I'm Kendra Hanna.
And I'm Ian Dongla.
This is the Radioactive Podcast, a youth radio program at KUOW.
Today, the GOP seeks the Fountain of Youth.
A comic book artist tries to make his fame last more than 15 minutes.
And we debate Macklemore's artistic integrity.
I'm much too fast to take that test. Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Don't wanna be a richer man.
In the last presidential election, the Republicans got killed in the youth vote.
Almost two-thirds of 18 to 29-year-olds voted for Obama.
Now, the Republicans are left wondering about the future of their party. Radioactive's Kendra Hanna has more.
They want my vote. Well, not now, but in 2016. For Republicans, the last presidential election was a learning experience. They decided if they ever want to win another election, they need to start reaching out to other demographics. In early August, I attended a meeting of a group called the Young Republicans of King County. They meet once a month for an assembly and then get drinks at a nearby restaurant. I'm at the table with Christina Wennerland. She's the members director for the King County Young Republicans. This is how she describes herself.
20-something woman, conservative, pro-life Republican. In Washington State. And as you can see, there's like two of us.
This is Kyle Curtis. Among many other responsibilities, he is the vice president of the College Republican University of Washington chapter and the board secretary for the Log Cabin Republicans of Washington State. Curtis is what he calls a modern Republican. He's gay, he grew up on the Yakima Indian Reservation. He wants to broaden the definition of Republican to get more members.
Because any Joe Blow off the block thinks a conservative is, sexist, racist. We're not. We're not. We're totally different. And I want to show that aspect that you could be a conservative and you could be gay, or you could be a conservative and you could be a Hispanic, you know.
Wendelin thinks similarly.
I think that a lot of young people view the Republican Party as the old white guy club. And a lot of that is not true, but some of it is, there are a lot of old white guys.
In order to attract more young people, the party needs a younger face. In order to have a younger face, the party needs more young people. But Curtis is confident that there are young people ripe for the picking. He can see them.
I canvass on campus, right? And I have a table and I talk to students all the time. Almost everyone I talk to has some fiscal, like, conservative leaning. So people think that all college students are liberal. Completely wrong.
Like many other young Republicans, Wendelin thinks the party needs a message that resonates with young people.
And I think there are ways that we can get our facts across in a way that's compelling and that doesn't make us sound like Ben Stein calling Bueller.
Some of her peers are much less optimistic. A lot of the young conservatives I talked to said that youth are inherently liberal because of their low amount of life experience, their dependency on the government, their propensity for Beyonce. But wait, what about the youth's beloved siren song, social media? The New Republican National Committee report on the 2012 election results said, "We also need to communicate with young voters where they get their information. We can't use old communication tools for young voters." Wendelin says, in order to get young people, the party needs to get better online.
That's been a really big disadvantage that we have. The Obama campaign did that phenomenally well, and we have just not been able to keep up.
Curtis is trying to make up for lost time. The young members of the party, he says, need to be in charge of the websites and social media campaigns. Because of people like him, they're already moving in that direction.
I met with the state party just 2 weeks ago about updating their website. You visit the website now, it's crap. It's crap. And they know it's crap. It's just a matter of putting the time and investment into it to make it look sexy.
But what about policy? In the past, the Republican Party has put social issues front and center. Some of the young conservatives here said that this is hurting them. Here's Curtis.
If the Republican Party today was to take out its social issues, it would see an overwhelming amount of college students join the party. Guarantee it.
But many aren't willing to do that. As my friend Chris Templeton, an age 18 conservative, said.
Like, let's say if Coca-Cola tried to make it taste like Pepsi. Well, then all the Coca-Cola fans are going to get mad because it tastes more like Pepsi. And then all the Pepsi fans are just going to keep buying Pepsi.
But 70% of 18 to 32-year-olds don't support Pepsi the way they do gay marriage. It might be politically smart to take social issues out of the platform, but Winterland is completely against that.
They might be right. We might gain more young people. But I think that we would lose part of what makes us Republicans.
The party is in a state of flux. They know that in order to survive, they need to shift into a new Republican Party for a new generation. But how they should do this is up for debate, which they do often. And the future of the party lies in whether or not they will be able to make that decision. For Radioactive, I'm Kendra Hanna.
Tell me what I said I'd never do. Tell me what I said I'd never say. Read me off a list of the things I used to not like, but now I think are okay.
Okay, so when I think of shifts, I don't really think of politics.
But, like, demographics, majority swings, shifts in public opinion, politics is the definition of shifts.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little too selfish for that.
All right, so what do you think of?
Fame.
Fame?
Fame, baby. Switching from normal, mundane, everyday life to money, power, paparazzi.
Yeah, I don't really think about that.
Okay, well, us vain people do. And so I have two stories about people shifting in and out of fame. The first is about a guy you probably haven't heard of, Nate Simpson.
I thought we were talking about fame.
Okay, well, he was famous for a little bit.
What did he do?
He made comics. Nate wasn't always a comic book artist. He actually goes through a number of shifts to get there. And when we start our story, Nate's making video games, but he's not really enjoying it.
I got a little tired, I think. You have to trade off so much in the way of quality sometimes in order to get a product out the door that you sometimes wonder if you have the ability somewhere inside yourself to do something that has some real meaning.
So here's shift number one. Nate quits his job and starts on a screenplay.
A screenplay?
Yeah, a sci-fi space opera screenplay. It's not very good. Actually, by Nate's own admission, it's terrible. So he quits and he has no idea what he's going to do next.
Went on a long walk with my wife trying to figure out what we should do after having spent so much time and money on this pile of crap. And then one of my friends said, hey, man, you know, you like drawing. Why not do a comic?
Boom. Shift number two. Nate's a comic book artist. He starts work on a sci-fi fantasy called Nonplayer, and he's loving it. I mean, he's really loving it.
It was pretty exhilarating. I felt like I had found my path. You know, it's that thing that we all look for in our lives, that our reason for being.
And he's doing some really impressive work. He starts this blog and posts some of the pictures, and there's just one problem.
What?
No one's really looking at it. He has like 4 followers at first. He doesn't even know how he's going to publish this thing. He thinks he's probably going to have to do it himself. Until.
Mm-hmm.
Some influencers on Twitter see his blog, like his stuff, and all of a sudden,
the blog blew up, and the stats sort of went off the charts. And then I started getting calls from publishers, and I got a call from an agent. Yeah, things got very real at that point.
Shift number three. Fame. Sweet, sweet fame. And for a while, things only get sweeter for Nate. Comic fans love his stuff, and the critics do too. He wins an Eisner Award for Best Newcomer, which is kind of like the Oscars of comics.
So he made it.
Yeah, but it didn't last.
Why?
Well, he has to start work on issue number 2, and he starts slow. He breaks his arm. He can't draw for a couple of months. And his comics are really detailed. It takes a lot of time, and he's already behind. And then when he finally does start working on it...
Looking back, if I'm being honest with myself, I started to coast a little bit. And what I didn't realize, for like the first maybe 5 or 6 months I was working on issue 2, I was doing very bad work.
And Nate and his wife have a son. which really changes his whole world. He can't afford to be that starry-eyed dreamer anymore.
One issue of a comic does not actually bring in enough money to put food on the table. You can only pitch that fairy tale future where it turns into a movie and you make $1 million and move to Los Angeles so many times. And so, yeah, I had to start looking for a job.
In?
Comics?
No. Gaming. Nate's a video game artist. Again.
Maybe it was even a useful exercise in humility, because I discovered that I had kind of become a jerk a little bit, and this definitely brought me back to earth. If life gives you an opportunity like it gave me, and it seems like you have achieved success, that is not the time to ease off of the throttle.
And Nate's still working for that opportunity. Every morning he wakes up at 4 a.m. and works on issue 2. He's hoping to release it shortly. But every morning a baby cries, and Nate puts down his pencil and becomes a father.
And admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Okay, but I'm not done yet.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And I'm going to start the next story with a question. Ever heard this song?
Oh!
No, I live under a rock.
Okay, well, for those of you who actually do, that's Macklemore's Thrift Shop. And that's the song that, you can forget about shifts for a second, catapulted him into the national spotlight.
And he stayed there.
That's right. So I talked to Hollis Wongware, one of his producers and collaborators. And she remembers the moment when she knew this was going to be big.
He got the Velcro. I'm going to pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket.
She's on tour in Burlington, Vermont, and she's in a car with a bunch of artists when
we turned on the radio and Thrift Shop was on the radio. It was the first time that we had heard a Macklemore song on the radio that wasn't on KEXP. And we got really excited. We just kind of started booping and partying, and then we pulled over by Burger King and we all treated ourselves to Burger King for this accomplishment of happening to hear a Thrift Shop on the radio in Burlington, Vermont.
If you didn't know, KEXP is a Seattle radio station that plays fairly obscure music.
Wait, they went to Burger King?
Yes, Burger King. It was a celebration of years of hard work and an incredibly bright future. I mean, Macklemore's rise to fame kind of shifted the whole music industry.
Macklemore is an independent artist through and through, and not only independent in the technical sense in that he's not signed to a major label, but he's independent in terms of his creative control and his creative agency within his career. So everything that Macklemore and Ryan Lewis do is done by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
And really, their rise to fame could take up this whole show. I mean, it's an incredible story. They've done a lot of unprecedented things. But I think there's another side of this that's kind of important.
What?
Well, the fans. I mean, how do they react when a local guy, their local guy, gets big?
It's just frustrating to see what he's become.
This is Peter Haller, a friend of mine.
I used to be the biggest Macklemore fan. Yeah, I would argue with people if they told me Macklemore sucked. He was really just an MC, paper and pen, his mind, his mic.
But lately, Peter's been kind of frustrated with one of his former favorites.
It's not really about the MC and his mic, which is what it used to be way long ago. Like, not with him, I'm saying what hip-hop was. And he really represented someone who could bring that back.
Really, there are two camps. Hollis and those who take pride in Macklemore's rise to fame, and Peter and those who feel like the artist they've always loved is turned into someone completely different. And I could talk over them in this segment.
As you are so brilliant at doing.
Yeah, but I won't, because I think Hollis and Peter can hash this one out on their own.
It's hard for me to say that, like, a true fan, quote-unquote, would, like, flip on the other side, because I feel like so much of the narrative of Macklemore and Ryan Lewis is their independence and their connectivity with people, not acting ever too cool to be real and be human.
The way I describe it is he has an ego about being humble. People are eating it up, how he doesn't, you know, talk about sex, drugs, and violence. And he's in turn eating that up.
Yeah, I've definitely felt this way before. Like, now everybody loves that artist, but they don't love the real artist that I loved when I, you know, was able to listen to that album so many years ago. And I think that because we have loyalty to artists, there also becomes this kind of like proprietary ownership around them.
What I'm saying makes me look like, quote unquote, a hater because he has all these fans now. But it's really more complicated than that. It's not so much that I don't like him because he's mainstream now. I just don't like him because of what he's become, what he represents.
You know, artists grow and we change, and it wouldn't be honest to be making the same type of music we made 5 years ago as we do now.
It's music that a lot of people can vibe to, and I don't you know, I don't mind that. I just don't like how people are buying that Macklemore is just this new burst of fresh air. Like, he's not really representing rap anymore.
Would you have done anything differently?
I'd probably do the same exact thing. And that's the problem with the world. We love money. I would sell out in an instant.
Hollis says understanding artistic integrity in the music industry is complicated. And she also thinks it's really important for fans to be critical. It keeps artists accountable. She understands how Peter feels.
Even if people do feel that way, it'd be hard for me to take it personally.
So what do you think?
About?
Well, I mean, do you think Macklemore sold out?
I don't know. I understand what Peter is saying. I remember I really liked like the band of Monsters and Men. And once I like heard them in a grocery store, and that was this weirdest moment for me because I didn't know anyone else like this band. But like, I also think it's pretty scuzzy when you stop liking a band because they got big.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's complicated, but... Well, if you want to weigh in, leave a comment on our Facebook page, Radioactive Youth Media.
Also, be sure to check out our website at kuow.org/radioactive.
Special thanks to Leela Kataev and Jenny Asarno, our fearless leaders.
And to our fellow Radioactivians, Shrikar Penamaka, Maddie Eubank, Rachel Lam, who are on the brink of becoming worldwide sensations.
And Isaac Noren, Carlos Nieto, and Amina Ibrahim, who just finished an enlightening yoga session and have shifted into nirvana.
Get well soon, Amina.
That's it for us. Be sure to check out our next podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Take that test. Change it. Turn and face the strain. Change it. Don't want to be a richer man. Change it. Turn and face the strain. Change it. It's going to have to be a different man.